communicating disenculturated truth into a particular culture, was presented by Nancy Scott on August 11, 2005, at Gutenberg College's Summer Institute, Disenculturating the Gospel. The copyright for this recording is held by Gutenberg College, Inc., 2005. Gutenberg College is a nonprofit organization, and contributions may be made at www.gutenberg.edu. This material may be copied and distributed in whole for non-commercial and educational purposes, subject to the inclusion of this introduction, all other rights reserved.
Today I'm going to talk a little bit about this topic of communicating the disenculturated truth, gospel, into a particular culture. I have a number of different thoughts about this topic, and as I was preparing my ideas over the last several weeks, and in particular over the last several days, I had a lot of different ideas about where I would go with this talk, and then about 30 minutes ago, I sort of decided to go a whole different direction. So we'll see how that works, but I'll probably do a little of both. First of all, I just want to state a couple of assumptions that I'm working out of, and those I think have been pretty well articulated and talked about so far this week. But one of the first assumptions that I'm coming from is that people who want to know are rational and capable of discovering truth that is really there through the inadequacies and limitations of language and culture. So while language and culture present limitations to us for really being able to articulate truth, it doesn't mean that there isn't truth there to be known and that we can't know it. So I'm assuming then that true truth exists, that there actually is an objective, disenculturated gospel that stands apart outside of any cultural expression of it. Whether or not we'll ever know what that purely disenculturated form is not really necessary because of being creatures of culture and the fact that we are people who use language. We have expressions for it, and that those expressions will, by definition, distort it. But the fact that it's distorted by those expressions does not mean it's corrupted by them or annihilated by it. So how do we communicate then with the culture that we live in and with one another? I, for one, really enjoy stories. I really love novels, movies, and I actually really enjoy hearing people tell their stories. In fact, I work as a counselor in part, and one of the things that drew me toward deciding to become a counselor was how much I enjoy hearing people's stories. Now, sometimes the stories that I hear in my counseling office are stories that nobody else is going to hear, and it's sort of a place where any story is accepted. It's a place where people bring their stories, kind of a little bit like what David was saying about the Russians. I really kind of appreciated that when the Russians were telling you their stories that they had never told anyone else, it was like they really needed to tell those stories to someone. And I think that's a part of what I do, is give people a place where they can really tell their stories. So I think that our lives are very much a story, and that we each have an individual story that our lives being lived out tells, and that the experiences, the decisions we make, all those things go into building the story that is the story of our lives. So I actually really love that we live in a time and place that emphasizes stories, that emphasizes that we have a story to tell. And I appreciate the postmoderns for that. However, there's a place where that appreciation stops. And that is where there's a separation between the value of our individual stories and a connection to a greater story. Because if you think about even the message of the Bible and the story that's being told in the Bible, the story of the nation of Israel, the story of Jesus coming, it's like there's this grand narrative happening that's authored by God, and there really is a God there authoring this narrative, both in history and also in our individual lives. And I think that when we separate our own stories from any connection to that context, then our stories lose any real cohesive meaning. And there's something about how we're created that we long for and go after cohesive meaning and understanding for our lives. It's something that is a very fundamental human drive, it seems to me. So, what does this have to do with communicating disenculturated truth? Well, one of the reasons I wanted to talk about stories is that I think, for one thing, stories are a good way to communicate. But I also think we live in a time and place when we're very relational. In other words, people want to, we want to be in dialogue with each other. It was occurring to me as I was thinking about my own generation. I think we have cross-cultural things that happen. We have cross-generational things that happen. I think that as I was growing up, my generation was not nearly as allergic to lecture format as the current generation is. In fact, even the fact that we have one lecture a day is kind of a big deal here. And sometimes we struggle a bit with that because, as you know, I mean, this whole institute is discussion. And I think that that really works well in the culture in which we're set, that we have an opportunity to dialogue with each other and that we have an opportunity to interact. So I think that we live in a very relational time and place, and a place where dialogue is very important. There seems to be a real allergy in today's generation against monologue and lecture kind of format. So, okay, so what are some components of communicating, not only in the context of this culture, but just communicating in general, this disenculturated truth? Well, if we take Jesus' commandments seriously about loving God and loving others as being the two greatest commandments, then it kind of can be a picture up for us of how we might communicate. So the loving God part has to do with, if we are people who say we love God, then we really need to be people who are interested in knowing God and in knowing what God values and in knowing what God likes, knowing what he doesn't like, and really working at coming to understand that. And as Ron really helpfully pointed out yesterday, there really is a way that we can understand Scripture that is helpful for that. There really is a message that's been given to us that has authority from God. If we can be good students of it and read it in its context and let the authors speak for themselves, I think we have an incredible source for understanding what God loves and the value system that he operates by. So one of our first steps is going to be our own homework of really understanding and identifying the essentials of the gospel out of Scripture. So it might also include, as some of the passages we've looked at this week has illustrated, really distinguishing essentials from non-essentials in the gospel, and really continuing to work toward understanding what Paul meant when he talked about different things that were either essential or not essential in terms of the gospel. And I think we have a great model in Paul of really working with cultures, a lot of different cultures that he was working with, and also starting off this seedling set of churches that so quickly went kind of haywire in a lot of different directions. We have this great example of how he worked with that and how he very kindly often worked with it. So I think that's loving God. Then if we think about loving each other, loving others, how would that reflect in our communicating? I think one of the ways that it could be reflected is by really learning to become good listeners. It seems to me that the first step in really doing any kind of language learning or cross-cultural, and it seems to me that in our culture more and more, there are so many different cultures within our culture, that there's so many different ways words are used, there's so many different ways ideas are expressed, that we can use the same words for things and mean totally different things. And so there really is, I think, a lot of language learning that needs to happen when we interact with each other and even to have relationships with each other. I was thinking about Jack's talk. He was talking about sort of the nature of private language and how language ends up being very private because we get these meanings going. I see this a lot when I work with couples who come into my office. They are speaking really different languages. And it seems to me that men and women, I mean, as a picture, marriage is this incredible picture of kind of the ultimate cross-cultural experience, because men and women are so different from each other. It's like they inhabit totally different worlds in a certain way. We're just made that differently from each other. And what a project for God to put before us to work at understanding each other in the context of a marriage. I think that that's actually a really great metaphor for how we should understand relating to one another in general. That to really understand and try to listen to each other, we have to learn one another's language. So I think marriage is actually a really good picture for that. Obviously, there's a very specific commitment and pledge that you're making to a person that you actually are saying you're going to learn their language over the course of a life when you marry someone. We're going to be working with each other in different ways outside of marriage. But I think the picture is the same, that we're that different from each other. So what does it look like to love one another and to learn how to listen? I think that one step in learning that process is to really work towards self-awareness. In other words, understand my own personal story, understand my personal lens, what has shaped it, how I see the world, and how that might affect my own interpretation of the disenculturated gospel. So how do the influences and experiences that I've had shape how I interpret what I hear from the biblical authors, for example, themselves? Because again, I'm assuming here that there is truth that is out there. My personal lens is going to affect my understanding of that truth, but it isn't going to annihilate the possibility of understanding that truth. But it's going to, because it affects it, it's really worth my working at knowing how it affects it. So in knowing how my personal lens interacts with that and how my beliefs, and I'm talking about not just cognitive beliefs, but emotional beliefs as well, how those experiences go into making me who I am and how I understand things, how my story plays out. The more I can do that, I think, the more I can understand and step outside of myself to really hear somebody else's story. And so really listening openly and curiously to a particular person or culture, I think, is going to be the first step in communicating with it, is to learn a language by listening to it and by working toward understanding it. So in that process, I can learn to translate my understanding of truth into your language once I know your language. And there's another part of this. I really need to know how you see it, because I'm not going to see it well. My lens is going to distort my view of it. And the more I can get input from you about how that works, the more likely I'm going to be able to really work with and understand the real truth. And we're going to get to be able to work toward getting closer to that over time. And I think that's a really valuable thing. So knowing that there's both content and process at work, knowing that there's both the what that we're going to know and the how that we're going to know it in the midst of our own stuff, our own lens, our own reactions to things, and then in how we work with each other. I think that another piece of this idea for communicating is when I first started with the idea that loving God is a really big part of this, loving God and understanding the disenculturated gospel, the essentials of the gospel, if we really think about that, then part of what we know from that gospel is that we're in need of being rescued. It's kind of a fundamental piece of the real gospel, is that we're in need of being rescued and that God has promised to rescue us. And for those of us who want to be rescued, there is rescue available. But because that's such an integral part of the essential gospel, then I can also know that I'm not going to get it right all the time, that I need to be rescued. That means I'm not going to get it right all the time, and I'm going to fail, and I'm going to work really hard at loving God and loving others, and I'm going to really blow it. And a lot of times I'm not going to know what's true until after I've finished failing and understand then what happened and work with what happened. So that's kind of the what and the how. There's all kinds of process involved. So I don't think this life is going to ultimately, if we understand God's sovereignty and if we understand the reality of our brokenness, then it's not going to surprise us that we're going to limp along toward the kingdom together. And in doing that, I think there's just a lot of grace that we can give each other. So when it comes down to communicating, it seems to me that we really can allow for this process to be moving forward. There's some implications of that. That means that I'm not going to feel compelled to make sure you understand what I've decided is true. That's not really going to be as important to me as it is that I understand how you're seeing it, what you're thinking about it, where you're going with it, and just kind of being in that with you. Because if we're moving toward the truth together, we're going to need each other along that way to help each of us see better. Now that sounds really, perhaps that might sound postmodern and relational in one sense, and I think it really is. But the difference is that we really do have a target that we're going toward. And I think so much of the postmodern influence, even in the church today, is that there really isn't any target anymore. It's not that there's really something out there that we're going to get toward, that we're going to get closer to as we live. We're just in it together and we're just going to kind of be here. And I want to just really say that I think that's very different than what I'm saying. But it can look the same because we are in it together and there's going to be a process. And when you're in a process that's uncomfortable to me, one of the ways I'm going to try to work with that in order to love you is to work with my own discomfort and understand, even try to work with what is it that's uncomfortable about that to me. Maybe it reminds me of some painful thing in my own life. Maybe it makes me uncomfortable because it's not as it's not in a neat category, and categories are really important to me. But either way, I'm going to need to really work with my own discomfort rather than clobber you with, you need to see it this way right now. So that's I think we have a lot of freedom. If we understand the process that we're in together, then we have a lot of freedom to let each other be in that process together. But again, it's not without a target, and it's not without saying that there really is true truth that we can know, and that God in his faithfulness is the one getting us there ultimately. I think that this really is in contrast with sort of a postmodern relational view of the gospel, where sort of a relationship-only Christianity, if you will. And tomorrow's reading, I think, will maybe be interesting for this. The book Blue Like Jazz has made quite a storm appearance here on the West Coast. One of the sections, without going too far into that since it's tomorrow's reading, I found it very interesting when he used the analogy of the mother who told him the story about her marriage when he was afraid of falling. He starts out by saying he's afraid that, he's hoping he never falls away from Christ, but he's not really sure he won't. And this woman's words are very encouraging to him, because what she says to him is, when a relationship is right, like her marriage, then 20 years later you could no more wake up and just decide you're not going to be there than you could do anything. And I thought, well, that's a nice story, but how does that really relate to whether or not his faith is true faith and whether or not he will fall away from God? Well, the way he's seeing it is that really what we have here is a relationship with Jesus, and that's what's going to confirm us. And because it's a good marriage, it'll never fail. he just finished in that section saying, since it's now it's just about everybody who's smarter, then he's not even interested in the intellectual questions anymore. And that this marriage model is what's helpful to him. The thing that I thought about that was that the woman who's been married for 20 years, who can no more think of that marriage failing at that point, there's content to that marriage. There's not no content there. It's not just because that would happen. It's because they've invested in really understanding each other. A marriage that's going to survive in that way has content to it. It has reality to it. It has having weathered very difficult things and really big conflicts and worked toward understanding each other and worked toward ratifying that commitment over and over and over again in 20 years. So there's this huge piece that he's sort of jumping right over to just make it sound like, well, if it's the right relationship, we don't have to worry about it. And I think it's the same way with our faith. Our faith has content to it. It isn't that that we're just going to hang on because we decided that's what we wanted to do, and 20 years later, I hope I'm still hanging on for emotional reasons or whatever. That's kind of what he talked about there, is that he will stay with it for emotional reasons, not intellectual reasons. And I think, ugh. What a frightening basis on which to hope I can hang on to my faith. Because I think our faith really does have content, and we need to be willing to work with what it is we're believing and why. But that's different than understanding that because our faith has content, we have to be getting it right. Our faith has content in that as we live our lives, we're confronted by different experiences, different events that challenge what we believe, and we're called to decide again what we think is true about that. But there really is something true out there that we're getting closer to along the way and that we're working with to understand better, and that ratifies our commitment to that over and over again along the course of our lives, if we really are God's children and he's holding on to us. And I think there's real content in that. So I'm not saying, again, I love how it's about stories and that we're in this together and that there's this process. But the process really does have an outcome to it, and it really does have substance to it that we also need to be working with along the way. I just have to say that it's really hard for me that we're not going to discuss this until the discussion time, because I don't really like doing this lecture thing. I kind of want question and answer and like, does that make sense? What do you guys think about what I've said so far? In fact, I kind of meant to say that earlier and just say, we're not going to do it that way. We're just going to talk about this a little bit on the way. So we might at the end. I don't really know how long I'm going to go, so we'll see what happens. But okay. So I think that the project that we have in terms of communicating to our culture and also to one another is really working at being self-aware, understanding how our own lens clouds and affects how we understand truth, and because of that, holding our position with great humility. Jack also said something in his talk about, and I wanted to say it this way a little bit, just a little differently, the problem is not that truth exists. The problem is that I can be such a jerk about it. So it's not truth's fault that there's a problem here. The problem is that I can hit you over the head with it. And that's why I say what we really need to be looking at is how do we love each other? Because I think that is part of our calling and part of the true calling of God. Okay, and that's going to take, again, the self-awareness and this willingness to be wrong, and a willingness to trust that God is in charge of the process, not just for me, but for you, as we're working together to understand each other and know what's true. Okay, so that's kind of, I think, a personal calling that we each have. We're each called to work in the context of our relationships to understand each other and to communicate the truth as we're being exposed to it and understanding it with each other. And in some ways, I think Bonhoeffer's reading was very pointed at that, that's what life together looks like, It looks like being really broken together and really remaining at God's mercy together. Now, as far as a broader calling goes, that's an individual calling that I think we each have. There also could be a broader calling of actually communicating this gospel to a variety of cultures or settings, whether it's in our own sphere of influence, wherever we are, or whether we might be called to go to a different culture altogether to bring this gospel, to bring this disembodied truth, this disenculturated truth. A couple of examples of that, I think we see a lot of them in the New Testament with Paul going to different cultures and talking to different people. And the way that he did that, I think, is a really good model for us. He really entered into the culture in order to, he even said, "I become all things for all people so that I might by all means save some." I think he was really willing to use the cultural forms and the cultural words and language and all those kinds of things in order to gain a voice with his particular audience, whichever that audience would be. And I think that we can do the same thing. And in terms of the culture that we live in, it's sort of a, there's a couple of cultures I think that we each interact with. One is maybe the church culture, the Christian culture. And another one is our secular culture and sort of how we interact with that. It would take work to really understand and use the culture's forms and language, those neutral language forms, to use them to bring real truth into their context and using their words. I also have an example from years ago. I began a process to become a literacy person with a community development person with Wycliffe Bible Translators, and so I studied linguistics with them for a summer. And during our orientation process, we were told a lot of different stories about how Bible translation happens. And one of the stories that I remember really well was the story of some translators in Papua New Guinea who, when they were translating the story about Jesus being the bread of life, they ran into a problem because these people didn't have bread. And not only that, they didn't have any idea what they were talking about when they talked. They didn't have a word for it. So in their language, they didn't even have a word. So they had to kind of figure out, well, so what would it be like in this culture? Well, these people, as a real staple part of their diet, ate the root of this plant that was kind of a tuber, sort of a potato-ish kind of thing, but more like a, what are those things called? I can't think of it. But anyway, it's a root plant, and it's called sago. And they mash up this root, and they make a paste out of it. And so the sago paste is like they put it in everything. It's like you're eating it all the time, kind of like bread. And it was part of their sustenance. And so they used that word. When they came to that spot and translated it, they said that Jesus said he was the sago paste of life. And they had a word for it, and they understood it, and they went with it. So I think that we have, again, we have a lot of freedom to take ideas and principles. If we understand the principles well, we can bring them into a lot of different cultural forms, and they don't have to be kind of a literal reading of if the King James Version was good enough for the Apostle Paul, it's good enough for me kind of thinking about Scripture, which I actually have heard. So to what extent can I take the biblical message into my current culture? First, I think, again, it takes separating out the principle from the expression of it. I think that one thing we've seen from the different biblical passages this week is that Paul, if Paul did anything over and over, it was that he wanted to clarify the gospel over and over and over and over and over. He wanted to clarify when was something cultural and when was something essential. And not only that, but when are your cultural expressions maybe saying something that you didn't intend for them to say, and they might actually be getting onto the essential territory. Even when the practice itself may not be an essential thing, the communication that it's making is. So I think that that's also a really good model, and I think we can be really careful and cautious and deliberate about what are the cultural forms that we are just kind of used to and not really even aware of? How do they communicate and what do they say? And how could we really be cautious and careful about making sure that our own expressions of things reflect real truth in some way? Now, that could be a really big discussion, so maybe we can talk about that in the discussion later, because I think that would be an interesting topic. So really, I think any kind of neutral cultural form, that really any kind of cultural form is acceptable and appropriate so long as we're really careful that it communicate what we intend for it to communicate. And in our postmodern milieu here, I think, again, kind of reviewing relationships, relational modes of communication are really powerful for people. Dialogue seems to be really helpful here. There's a lot of communication that can be done visually. We're very much a visually focused culture at this point. Filmmaking is a great tool, a great language to use. Writing stories are great. So to just sum up, we have stories to tell that need to be heard, and we need to listen to each other. And in listening to each other, we need to really be self-aware and face the discomfort that it might be when the story that you're telling me has struggle in it or has something that I'm uncomfortable with. That I really need to listen to, what would it look like to care about you here? What would it look like to be in this process with you? Not what would it look like to give you the answer that's going to solve your problem, but rather, how can we be in this together? How can we be equals here, moving toward a target of real truth and real rescue? So then communicating is to be with humility. The problem is not truth, but love. So the answer is not to dispense with truth or throw truth away, but the answer is to learn to love with humility, with respect, with listening. Listening to content and process, gaining a voice, and knowing that my own perspective and understanding is going to need to be modified over time, that we're really not going to get there perfectly here, but that we have a long journey ahead and God is in charge of it. So our homework will be to be self-reflective students of the Bible and of our experience in order to have the thing of truth, something true, to really communicate with each other and be working with. And then being in the process with each other of caring about each other and letting that come through over time. That's all I have to say. If anybody would like to talk now, we could do that. Any thoughts, ideas, questions?
Can you talk about what I've heard expressed as concerns one picture of some information that might get out there, say it's film, music, or any other, writing, whatnot, and it doesn't say Jesus, or it doesn't say you mm-hmm. need to do this or this or this. Mm-hmm. There's often been criticism that when you put something out there that people makes them think about our condition, our problem, but doesn't hit them over the head with the answer. You're leaving them hanging, and they might just go the wrong way.
They might just what?
They might just make a wrong choice and not
go away.
See that, from that song, I need to do this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You just discuss that and discuss, sure. How you would address people's concerns about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess my first response is that there's all kinds of truth out there that, especially in a culture like ours, I think we need to start with common truths rather than truths that we don't share a common language for. I think that the word Jesus in certain crowds has absolutely no meaning. Actually, that would be good if it had no meaning. I think it has negative meaning. And so I think it's not a magic word. in a way that we might kind of tend to think of, we have to get these words out there so that the gospel can come through. I think we can start from a place of our common experience, and I think in part that's our common experience as being broken. And since that's one of the essential features of the gospel, then that's something that in my humanness I can really connect with other people about. So I think we have to start at common ground. And if the word Jesus is common ground, then we could talk about who Jesus was and what that means. But we've got to build a vocabulary almost to get there, I think. So I'm not sure it's going to be helpful to make sure that there's that kind of content in some work of fiction or art or film. Does that make sense?
Am I
making a problem? Does that kind of address what you're...
How does that work? Separate knowledge, when you can't come to a common knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
To go from that platform, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that there is still a lot of common... I think if we really have a good understanding of the gospel, we'll understand how much we have in common, for one thing. Certainly there's cultural distinctions between the Christian culture and the secular culture. But in a way, I think that's a problem, because the Christian culture has so separated itself from any real connection to the outside culture. I just think it's going to be a long walk together with those people who we don't have that common language with. And I think it's okay. And I think that if they, the issues that they might be wrestling with, I think we could talk about those and listen to those and get to talking about Jesus fairly quickly. But it's going to have some context to it and some foundation to it. Does that make sense? Does that fit with... Anybody else have ideas about that?
A thought that
the one Christian culture tendency is like Mr. North was telling us today, that, you know, what's useful about your talk, Nancy, is it helps us devise a strategy. And I just think that we need to recognize that that is the self-destruct button, I think, mm-hmm. right there for our modern culture.
Yeah.
Because if we approach an interaction with another person... this becomes a question, because I'm not quite sure what evangelism means anymore, and in this context. I'm greatly relieved that it doesn't mean some personal obligation I have to go out there and win souls, and at least I think that it doesn't mean that.
You're hoping.
Yep. But I do think that one thing that could be taken from what you're saying is, you know, the new strategy is just hang out with people where they're at, and find out where they're at, and then you can start dropping in
mm-hmm. yeah.
Jesus and hell and eternal life and that kind of stuff.
Right.
And I know you're not saying that, but
right.
it does complicate it, because then, well, actually, it really does call us to a powerful place of humility where my vested interest in being there is finding out about you. It's
exactly.
actually not looking for
exactly.
my opening to...
Exactly.
Help you out.
Mm-hmm.
I guess
yeah.
that's probably what you mean by brokenness.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and common ground there. That we really are... I mean, obviously there's some really significant differences between believers and unbelievers, but one very significant difference that I don't think is there, that our Christian culture has tended to say is that we have it together and they don't. And I think very often our communication of the gospel can have that tone to it. Like, I have answers that you need. And while on a certain level, that's actually really true, but I'm the same kind of beggar at that table as you are. And I think that's so important to really know how broken we are, and that even the answers that I have are distorted by my own understanding, by all kinds of different things. I had another thought when you were talking about evangelism. Oh, one of the reasons why it sort of separated what I was saying into kind of personal calling versus a more broad calling, I do think that evangelism as such could be the calling of specific people. But if it's going to be cross-cultural or even cross-cultural here and now in our culture, it does seem like a fairly specific calling. But what does that mean about how we interact with each other and how we interact with the people that we come into contact with? I think that we need to just work at being loving. And as God, if we really understand God's sovereignty and the way that souls are saved, then we're going to understand that as God gives an opening, he might actually give me a place in someone's process in coming to know him. And that would be really cool. But it isn't my job to go out and figure out who that is. And, you know, I mean, I'm going to be there and be listening. I'm going to be there. But I'm not going to be seeing it as my job to make sure they hear something so that they have something to respond to. Does that make sense? Is that?
I think, and also to Seth's question as far as what do we, I mean, if we don't share the name of Jesus, what do we share, particularly in a secular environment? And I think if there's any truth behind the biblical description and hopefully our own understanding of the human experience, then we have a wealth of things in common. And I was thinking even of Brad's documentary and the fact that, yes, there's some explicit references to biblical teaching and biblical views, and yet at the same time what it was a very honest, very compelling, and by no means unique expression of the struggles and problems of being a young man trying to figure out what to do with these relationships. And I think whether it's in a documentary or whether it's in our lives when we're sharing those things, it strikes me that that's the common ground there is. And I think that the less that it's our Christian interpretation that seems to be imposed in such a way that it doesn't feel like real life, that's where it's not even the truth that we are sharing in the first place, because it's something that's removed from our own experiences.
I hang out with music people who aren't necessarily Christians or think that way, and occasionally things will happen or come up that about Christians, because Christians are not very well liked right now. I don't know if you've noticed that in our culture. But from time to time, somebody will say something or do something that's fairly Christian bashing. And I find myself really struck by it. And one time recently, this one friend of mine said something along those lines that was so contrary to anything that Jesus would have really represented. But it was really, he really was bashing on a Christian form that was what was the opposite of what Jesus would have done or said. And I was with him on it. And I remember just reacting to it and talking to him about it and saying, and then kind of pulling it in, and he just laughed at me. And I said, yeah, see, I'm in this weird spot where I'm one of these Christians that doesn't really like Christians. And I thought later about some of the things that that we're talking about here, and what does that say to him, and what. Well, I think it says something really true and really honest to him, that I don't really like a lot of what's out there right now, and I'm somebody who's trying to figure out what Jesus was really about. So anyway, and we ended up having a conversation about being atheists and what we believe and stuff, so it was kind of interesting. But I find myself saying things every now and then that I think, that wasn't a very Christian thing to say. But it was very real and honest, and I think that in our culture, it's like that there's a voice there. It's like, I'm not other than. And most of the experiences I've had with people in this music crowd, they've had such bad experiences of Christians that I'm treading on some really rocky ground already. And I mean, I'm not there for that. I'm there for the music with them. And I think that's another thing that's really, you know, a lot of those people didn't even know I was Christian probably for months, for maybe a couple of years. But anyway, I'm just kind of talking out loud about my own struggle to understand sort of how to relate to that and to understand that, I mean, the thought of, and knowing those folks and knowing who they are, the thought of coming to them with an agenda would be so incredibly unloving. So We're just there. So, Brett, what were you going to add?
I was a little confused by one thing. I really love what you're saying about, you know, the listening aspect, because I feel like as a culture we don't listen anymore. And in conversation, I mean, many times, like, we'll come home from a party and Earl will say, he'll be really exhausted. Sorry, Earl, I'm gossiping about you, but he'll be really exhausted. And Earl is a very good listener and a very good question. I mean, he's very caring that way. He does it with me, and I see him doing it with people, where he asks lots of questions. And a lot of times he'll come home and he'll say, not one person has asked me one question about me. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like as a culture, you know, that's mm-hmm. we're really in a crisis that way. So I love that, what you said, but what I was a little confused about, my memory's kind of bad, so what you were saying about that we're just there to, in interacting with Christians, you were kind of saying that we're not there to fix them, but we're there. What was the wording you used? We're just there to...
To be in it together?
Be in it together, yeah, okay.
Maybe.
And maybe I'm not understanding what you're saying, and then maybe I'm thinking of a different situation, but the one situation that just really bothers me a lot and kind of hurts my heart, you might say, in where I live and then what's going on in the churches, is that I feel like Christians will continually say, now it's not too good to be too theological, you know, and they make it sound, well, first of all, they don't even know what the word theological means. And to me, that's so like, okay, so it's not spiritual to want to learn about God. So that's where, I mean, maybe it's the Gary North in me, I don't know, where, you know, I want to go and say, you know what? You know what? That's inaccurate. That's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know
mm-hmm.
what? Can you help me with what you said and what I'm...
Well, yeah, I think you're touching on the distinction that I'm really trying to make clear, is that I think we can be very relational in our faith together, but that's not the same thing as saying there isn't content out there that we're moving toward, and that those... And that's why I think we really need to be very careful students of the Bible, because the more we really understand the true gospel, really the more free we are to be in process together. but there's also, and what I mean by that is, if we really understand the sovereignty of God, for example, then I don't have to have an agenda when we're talking. You know, I can actually let God work out the agenda for you and just be in it with you. But I'm not saying that I'm never going to say something true to you.
Okay.
I'm not saying that.
Okay.
I really think that, I'm thinking about whether or not I should say this out loud in public. Now I have to, I guess. I in my counseling office, sometimes I struggle with my training, which told me I'm never supposed to say anything about anything, but just listen. I'm really thankful for that training, because through my counseling, I am learning how to be a listener. I am learning how to listen to people. And it is really hard work. It's really hard work to listen. Because we don't get each other easily. So it's hard work. But I'm also in the situation sometimes with people who are very much... they have lots of symptoms maybe showing up. Anxiety, depression, all kinds of different symptoms. And I find that go back to the existential psychologist writers like Rollo May and you know, the different guys who were really pointing to the reason there's so much anxiety in our culture is because we're cut off from anything outside of ourselves. And I watch this process for people, and I often think what they need is really good theology. Because it's so grounding to know. I mean, the reason I can take people toward the truth of their pain, for example, is because I have a belief that God really is there at the bottom of it. If I didn't know that, if I didn't believe that God really is there at the bottom of their pain, it would be incredibly irresponsible of me to try to move people toward that. And it's not my place in that room necessarily to really talk about what it means that God is there. But the reality that God really is there is going to be in the room because he really is going to be there in some way. And I believe that. So there are times when I talk content. That's what I started to say is don't tell anybody at the licensing board. But I do talk about content sometimes, and it's very helpful. I mean, I don't usually initiate it. It's usually because it's in the room being talked about anyway. But it's so helpful to come to an understanding of real reality as an anchor to our souls and to our lives here and now. So anyway, is that kind of helpful to the truth and the just being in it with each other sort of thing?
Yeah. So are you saying then that there's sometimes room for correction, but again, maybe you're not saying that, but and sometimes you can even do it through questions. You know, you can use mm-hmm. questions to help someone to see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have time for one more.
Returning to Mike's question earlier, relating to what we were just talking about, mm-hmm. Who's the U2 singer?
Bono.
Bono? I've never liked him because I don't like his sunglasses or whatever those are that he wears. But there was a...
There's some content there, Jack.
Pardon me?
There's some content.
Yeah. I'm deep.
I'm just deep.
There was an article about an interview that some music magazine had with him where he... I can't remember the question, but he makes a distinction between karma and grace that is really succinct and very true and very Pauline and very profound. Mm. So I have a newfound respect for him. But I wonder if I'm sort of sympathetic with the criticism that you didn't mention Jesus, not in the shallow and superficial and silly sense that you have to mention Jesus to be saying anything true or anything profound, because obviously you don't. I mean, I think we can all accept that. But it seems to me that there come sometimes within our culture in a reaction against the false piety and self-righteousness and thick religiosity of Christian culture, we bend over backwards to not ever become explicit about the faith. And that's what I respected in Bono, is that he was just really straightforward about it. I mean, he wasn't ashamed of it at all. Mm-hmm. And on the other... And then I also read an article about Ann Coulter in an interview that they were having with her, and somebody asked her, is it ever hard to have so much criticism against you? And her response was, I mean, I almost hear her saying it as, well, Jesus Christ died for my sins and I'm forgiven, so why do I care what they think? Or something like that. And again, I just, you know... To be that straightforward about the content of it, and if I'm reading into it rightly, to not be ashamed of it, I think is exactly what we're supposed to be all about. Mm-hmm. So we shouldn't be allergic to content at the same time that we shouldn't feel compelled to, mm-hmm. I mean, content, explicit Christian, distinctively, uniquely Christian content, mm-hmm. any more than we should be afraid to not have that there. I mean, mm-hmm. both seem to be appropriate. Truth is truth. And so proclaim the truth in whatever way is natural and appropriate at the particular time that we're, you know.
Okay, so we'll come back later.